Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we've got an action-packed show for you today. Going to catch you up on the latest and the greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, a lot of motorsports news to catch up on. IndyCar, NASCAR. We'll talk about Hertz Rent-A-Car and some interesting things they're doing to try to make sure that you don't bring back the car that you just rented, maybe damaged or scratched. And it's pretty crazy. Also tell you a little history about the Laguna Seca Raceway. Got a story about the Toyota Proving Grounds out in northwest of Phoenix, up in Whitman, making some big noise about some money they're going to invest. And then, of course, we'll talk about gas prices. And, of course, it wouldn't be the car show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on the car show. Well, the first story from the pages of the website The Drive. And the headline says, how to stop Hertz AI rental car damage from taking advantage of you. Well, rental car companies Hertz recently used AI-powered scanner raters to inspect cars before and after rentals and are getting plenty of attention about them. One of the readers wrote into The Drive to tell us about their experience renting from Hertz at the Atlanta Hertz-Hartsfield Airport. All in all, they have some things in common. A customer rents a vehicle from Hertz. Upon return, the scanner finds some insignificant blemish on the vehicle, leading to an unexpected high charge that are often doubled through the tacked-on administrative fees. Now, how these stories have proliferated, we thought we'd give you some helpful advice on how to protect yourself in these situations. Some suggestions are a little bit more obvious than others, but most importantly thing is to remember that this technology is still new and it is not yet commonplace. Hertz and other rental car companies use it also may adjust how they incorporate the AI scanning going forward. In a light of these recent stories, the topic is certainly evolving in real time. At the moment, here are some of the tactics that we would recommend. Well, number one, don't rent from a company that uses a scanner. And this one's kind of obvious, but it's true. The best way to avoid this in this situation is simply avoid companies that use scanners. This will certainly become more difficult over time, as in the Hertz case, as the company is currently rolling out the UVI equipment to more airport locations. Hertz has 1,600 stores in airports around the U.S. It's currently shooting to have 100 of these adopt the AI inspection before the end of this year. Currently, locations, the Atlanta Hartsfield Airport, the Charlotte Douglas Airport, Houston George Bush, the Newark Liberty, Phoenix Sky Harbor, yeah, that's right, Sky Harbor here in Arizona, and Tampa International. So, in an ideal world, you'd call up your Hertz airport location and get an answer from an employee on the ground to whether their lots use the AI technology. And this is what we tried to do with five of the above stores. One took my message. Two hung up the second I pressed number two to speak with a local rep. The remaining two encouraged me to leave a message. But because their mailboxes were full, I couldn't. And such is customer experience in 2025. Now, if you're struggling to get confirmation, as I was, you can just avoid renting from Hertz or their other brands, Dollar and Thrifty, at the airports and go with a different agency. Now, there are other car companies in the U.S. that have publicly adopted scanning, and that's a company called Sixt, that's S-I-X-T, through their CarGate system, which works a little differently. Hertz scanners immediately charge the customer for the damage they detect without any kind of human review. An agent only gets involved if a customer flags the alleged damage by using the company's chat box system. Sixt said that its employees review all AI-detected damage and renters aren't charged anything until they've had a look. Here's a quote from their company's help center. If new damage is detected, it's carefully reviewed by our trained staff to ensure fair and customer-focused outcomes. Only if the damage is clearly identified by a staff member as new can the damage be claimed and initiated by Sixt. Well, that certainly seems more prudent than the way that Hertz has chosen to operate. Although we haven't heard from any Sixt customers about their experiences, if you happen to have one, send an email in the tips at the bottom of this article or just drop us a comment. Number two, use insurance. Now, many people buy the rental car vehicle protection policy at the desk, but plenty of credit cards and automobile insurance policies offer it as a benefit. People typically think this insurance is only coming into play when you get into a crash, but these policies also do cover expenses, cover small expenses like minor damage, like a reader who was charged $440 for a scratch on a rim, which could have been filed on a claim through their credit card company and recover the cost, provided the benefit was available to them. Spoke to a representative for a credit card that I carry, and they say in such instances like cracked windshields, for example, this is still termed as collision with objects and thus is covered. That being said, not all forms of vehicle protection are equal. Hertz offers its own course, but it can be expensive on a per-day basis. Plus, paying a company ahead of time to cover the cost of significant damage might be a nickel and dime you later for then a zero net sum gain as you as a consumer. Now, Consumer Reports explains that credit card coverages tend to be secondary, which means you need to only apply after your own personal automobile policy has been tapped. They also lack liability coverage, and such incidents are outside the scope of a scuff, dent, and some of the things that we're talking about here. Ultimately, check with your company and providing to find out if you do rent, what is covered and what is not. Then you'll have to decide to use them or must deny the... Now, to use them, many people have to deny the rental car's coverage, and you must pay the full amount for the rental with the credit card that you're actually going to utilize to try to get the insurance from. In my case, my card, a limo, a cargo van, truck, or recreational vehicle like a motorcycle or antique cars defined as 20 years old, have not been manufactured in 10 years or more, are not eligible. Good news if next time I try to track down a Honda S2000 on Turo. For those of you who don't know, Turo is a car rental site that's very much like an Airbnb. You're actually renting people's personal cars. Number three, arm yourself with AI or at least record a video. In many cases, we've seen Hertz's identifying of charging of the actual damage is really just minor. The case the company probably wouldn't even fix, and a human inspector might ignore. But there have been some scenarios where the damage is so minor, it's not actually damage at all. One Hertz renter who spoke to the New York Times said they had an accident-free rental, and the Hertz employee at Atlanta confirmed their vehicle had no damage. During the scan, however, the AI flagged a dent so tiny it could have been anything or nothing. Nevertheless, the Hertz's live agent review still determined they needed to pay $195 for the tiny speck. Now, in such a situation, it could be advantageous if you had recorded your own vehicle. You could take a video at a minimum. Doesn't matter to who you're renting from, but today developers actually have built scanning apps that can leverage machine learning to identify and validate the differences between before and after photos. So you can check that out. Now, if you do plan to rent a car sometime soon, these are some steps that hopefully will let you have an incident-free and an inexpensive experience. We'd also recommend brushing up on the company's own criteria for what is considered a chargeable damage. In the case you have to fight back, Hertz actually lists examples of its threshold on its website for things like blemishes the company regards that the company penalizes renters for. These include a single dent that has a diameter greater than 1 inch, or a scratch or a scuff that exceeds 1 inch. On the wheels, even though we've seen Hertz scanners ring up customers for damage below both of those limits. It's also worth noting that Hertz gives itself an out on these situations and adds that these are quote-unquote thresholds and for illustrated purposes only and not intend to be inclusive of all damage, which you will be held responsible for. So, folks, it is absolutely a brave new world out there. Now we have scanners checking your car, and then they're just going to automatically send you a bill. Pages of the Arizona Business Journal, the headline of the article reads, Toyota plans huge upgrade of the Arizona testing facilities. Well, Toyota is investing $50 million to provide its vehicle's testing center in Whitman and has also broken ground on construction of a new oval track and an off-road park and other enhancements, according to the company. Along with that investment, Toyota is planning to build a new facility on the existing site, about 50 miles northwest of Phoenix, for developing advanced driver assistance technology. Now, Toyota set up the site called the Arizona Mobility Test Center at Toyota Arizona Proving Grounds in 1993, where the global automaker has tested more than 50 Toyota and Lexus vehicles for the North American market. Now, in 2021, Toyota opened its facilities up to other industry players to use as a testing center. Since then, the site has hosted 37 different companies that have tested over 280 vehicles and ultimately conducted over 200,000 hours hours of testing. Now, most of the newly announced construction and improvements will be completed later this year, according to the company. The facility spans over 11,000 acres, currently has 77 miles of testing surfaces, 60 of them paved roads, 50 of them off-road and dirt tracks and high-speed ovals. And the math doesn't add up to me, but we'll leave that for another time. The new investment comes as North Phoenix area is experiencing an industrial boom driven by the Taiwanese semiconductor manufacturing company's $165 billion plant currently under construction. Whitman is a rural town about 30 miles west of the development, and an even bigger industrial development is in another big industrial development is in the works near Whitman. The planned $3.2 billion Burlington Northern and Santa Fe Railway hub, over 4,000 acres in the project, is up for a rezoning vote from the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors in August, which would clear a way for this development, although some residents have been vocally opposing this. Toyota research and development initiatives have landed it thousands of patents from the United States Patent and Trademark Office, ultimately more than any other automaker over the past decade, according to the company. So the big Toyota test facility out north and west of Phoenix is getting some serious investment, and also not just for Toyota, for anybody else who's willing to come out and spend the money to test their vehicles there. Car news. IndyCar was up in Toronto, one of my favorite tracks, and the headline reads, "Award primed and ready for IndyCar title fight going the rounds." Well, Alex Palou looked like he was preparing a knockout punch with five races to go and one that would end Pato O'Ward's title hopes of capturing the IndyCar championship. But O'Ward turned the tables on his rival in Toronto and landed a big shot of his own to keep the title quest alive as the season reaches its final rounds. O'Ward's victory in the number 5 Arrow McLaren Chevy and Palou's misadventure with race strategy left him in 12th place with the Chip Ganassi Honda Racing meant the championship lead of 129 points was carved to just 99 with Laguna Seca, Portland, Milwaukee, and Nashville Speedways left to run. Taking more slice out of Palou's lead is by no means a guarantee, but Sunday's Honda Indy Toronto event proved that the O'Ward team is more than capable of delivering huge results when the pressure is on. Well, it's only like 99, but it's a good chunk, O'Ward said. Palou's good weekends are like today. We need to make sure that he continues to have days like today. Not just one, but a few. That would keep this conversation going, maybe until Nashville. That's my goal. Well, Palou has finished in the top 10, usually deep inside the top 10, 11 of 13 races in 2025. Which means nothing because his Toronto 12th place runs was maybe just an aberration. It was long overdue, the balancing of the scales in a season where adversity has rarely visited the Ganassi driver. But to have a chance of taking Palou down and securing his first IndyCar crown, O'Ward knows he'll need to do a lot more Toronto-like outcomes in the last four races if he has a chance of taking this. Obviously, we're in a time where the championship is going to have to get a little bit more in the conversation if we get our elbows out and we try to do more about what we did today. Just open the doors and we have a little bit of chance with a race like this. That's where we're going to catch it, and that's where we're going to beat him. So, Pato O'Ward, pretty excited because he has won two races in a row. He won back in Iowa, and he also won this weekend up in Toronto. And this weekend, the IndyCars are going to one of my favorite tracks, and I will be there at beautiful Laguna Seca Raceway in California. Well, I first went to Laguna Seca, gosh, I want to say back in the mid to late 80s. With my buddy Mitchell and his brother Michael and a bunch of our friends. We were actually 1 year we rode our motorcycles up there, which was a blast from Arizona. So the WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, originally named Laguna Seca Raceway, has a rich history tied to the Monterey Peninsula and its racing heritage. It was built in 1957 on the grounds of Fort Ord after the Pebble Beach road races were deemed too dangerous. The track name Laguna Seca translates to dry lake in Spanish, referring to the ancient lake bed where the track was constructed. Well, in the 50s, the Sports Car Club of America, SCCA, organized a Pebble Beach road race using public roads around the Del Monte Forest. These races were popular, but they were deemed unsafe due to the surrounding environment. So there was a need for a track. and the dangers of Pebble Beach led to the decision to build a dedicated racetrack. Well, Laguna Seca Raceway was built in just 60 days in 1957 for a cost of $1.5 million, funded by local businesses and individuals, and the first race was held on November 9th, 1957. Now, Fort Ord, which is a military base, the track was built on land formerly a part of Fort Ord, which was used for military training. The track layout has been modified over the years and included an additional infield section in 1988. Turn number two was renamed the Andretti Hairpin in honor of Mario Andretti, and turn nine was renamed the Rainy Curve in honor of Wayne Rainey. The Corkscrew, famous challenging turn with a significant elevation drop. And Laguna Seca has hosted a variety of prestigious races, IndyCar, Can-Am, IMSA, MotoGP, and certainly the Rolex Monterey Reunion, which happens every August. So I will be in Laguna Seca, and I'll capture some sounds of the track and the speedway, and we'll bring that back for you next weekend. And hopefully Pato O'Ward can win again, because he is definitely my favorite driver. NASCAR news, and the headline reads, Hamlin fends off Bell to score Dover hat trick in overtime. It should maybe be not just Bell, but Briscoe as well. Well, Denny Hamlin prevailed in Sunday's Echo Park Auto Trader 400 at Dover Delaware Motor Speedway, a race that had a 56-minute rain delay for rain. Yeah, red flag. Late race strategies involved a pair of overtime restarts before the trophy was ultimately settled between a pair of Joe Gibbs teammates. The veteran Denny Hamlin got it right when it mattered the most, getting the jump on the field in overtime and holding off his newest teammate Chase Briscoe, who was on fresher tires and marks a back-to-back wins at Dover's Concrete Mile for Hamlin and the NASCAR series with the with its best fourth victory of 2025. Well, things were going pretty well before the rain, and obviously we had to endure a few restarts, he said, smiling. Denny Hamlin, who was 44 years of age, who collected his 58th career cup victory and his first trophy since his son Jameson was born last month. It's tough. Those guys maybe gave me a good run for the money. Winning here at Dover is special to me. This place was not very good to me my first half of the career, and then to have back-to-back wins, well, that's pretty amazing. So, yeah, we had a red flag because of the rain, which came right toward the end of the race. I think there was less than 20 laps to go in the race. So, Denny Hamlin wins. His teammate, Chase Briscoe, finishes in second. Alex Bowman in third. Kyle Larson in fourth. And Ty Gibbs rounds out the top five. And this week, well, Indy will be the host for NASCAR at the Brickyard. The Brickyard 400 is today, and that is going to be on TNT. It's car news. The headline reads, Chicago Street Race dropped from NASCAR's schedule for 2026. Well, NASCAR will not return to Chicago in 2026, but has not ruled out running the street course again sometime in the future. The event's official social media account posted on Friday that the race will be paused for next season. NASCAR raced at Chicago around the 4th of July weekends over the past 3 years. Thank you for all that you've done to make NASCAR Chicago Street Race one of the most iconic events in global sports, the post read. Following the success we had at the first 3 years of the Chicago Street Race, we're going to hit pause for 2026 to afford us the time necessary to work collaboratively with the city of Chicago to explore a new potential date to develop a plan that further optimizes operational efficiency with the goal to return to the streets of Chicago in 2027. Together, we have built and grown an expanded community of fans that consists of longtime NASCAR enthusiasts and first-time racegoers around the globe. And for that, we are immensely grateful as we thank you for your continued support and look forward to seeing you at the races. So Chicago is out, but somebody is in, and that's next. Well, the headline reads, NASCAR headed for San Diego in 2026. Well, NASCAR is headed to San Diego next season. Racer has learned that a deal has been reached for NASCAR to return to Southern California next year, and the announcement of the event could come as soon as next week. San Diego has long been rumored destination for the sport over the past few months. As Racer noted last week, the Coronas, the Coronado thing has been floated as a potential destination. Now, it's unclear the exact location of where the next year's race will be or where it will fit into the schedule. And NASCAR is working through the potential returns to New York City, but now not Chicago. And the reality is that Chicago, they raced in Chicago for 3 years. Now, NASCAR will fill the void, San Diego will fill the void for NASCAR of not having a points race in Southern California since 2023, which that was Fontana, formerly known as the Auto Club Speedway, fell off the schedule during plans to turn the 2 mile oval into a short track. However, those official plans were paused earlier this year by NASCAR official commissioner Steve Phelps. So we're not sure what's happening with that track in Fontana. But right now, well, NASCAR is going to go to San Diego and they are going to race over on Coronado Island. That should be pretty cool. Formula One news, and the headline reads, only surprise with Horner's departure was the timing. McLaren Racing's CEO Zak Brown is saying the only potential surprise about Christian Horner's departure from Red Bull Racing in Formula One was the timing, because it was in the middle of the current season. Horner was removed from his positions as CEO and team principal at Red Bull just 2 days after the British Grand Prix, with Max Verstappen third in the Drivers' Championship and the team having won on two occasions so far this year. With multiple senior departures over the past 18 months and two internal investigations regarding into Horner's activities, Brown said it was the surprise. It wasn't a surprise to see them make a change, but he wasn't expecting it in the middle of the month. Yeah, surprised by the timing, but not the result. I think there's been a lot of drama there the last couple years, and that drama doesn't seem like that drama was calming down. In fact, it might be getting worse. You also have a situation where you got Max knocking on the door of other teams to see what's going on, and certainly Mercedes-Benz is one of those teams. So we'll see. Red Bull is in a state of flux right now, and Christian Horner, well, mark my words, I would not be surprised to see him turn up at Cadillac's new Formula One team. For a little weird and unusual automotive news, and the headline reads, Mercedes-Benz police car gets Australian man arrested for allegedly police impersonation. An Australian man is facing a host of charges after the New South Wales police say that they spotted his Mercedes-Benz S350 diesel outfitted with what looks like an official Chinese police vehicle. The first clue is that something wasn't right. The word police was misspelled. It was spelled P-O-I-L-C-E instead of P-O-L-I-C-E. That was on the hood. Well, on July 18th, Burberry Highway Patrol officers were patrolling the South Australian suburb of Strathfield, which is located about 10 miles west of Sydney. During the patrol, authorities say they spotted a rather unusual vehicle, a black Mercedes-Benz S-Class wearing Chinese police insignia on the door and hood and boasting emergency lights and other features that would fool the public into believing that the car was a legitimate police car. Well, the officer spoke to the 21-year-old male who was using the car, and according to the authorities, the suspect allegedly handed police a fake document stating that the car was designed to transport consulate officials from China. After seeing the document, the police decided to search the vehicle. They discovered a box of 48 rounds of live ammunition in the trunk. Suspect was asked about the ammunition. He allegedly told the police that he thought it was a good place to store it. Police then searched the subject's home, where they found and confiscated multiple weapons. The suspect does hold an active firearms license, according to authorities, but that license is now under review. And the man is facing multiple charges, including providing false or misleading information, driving a motor vehicle with unlawful police insignias, impersonating a Commonwealth public official in act or at place, possessing unauthorized and prohibited firearms. He was granted bail and due back into court on July 22nd. I'm going to talk gas prices with our friends at GasBuddy.com. Right now, gas prices $3.14. Average gas price in Arizona is $3.19, so pretty close to the national average. New Mexico, $2.85. Utah, $3.33. Colorado, $2.91. How about this? Texas, $2.75. Oklahoma, $2.74. Nevada, $3.75, and California at $4.50 a gallon. If you're looking for some cheap gas around the state, I'd head up to Prescott. Arco Station at $2.65 on Walker Road. The Costco at $2.65. How about the Fast Trip up in Bullhead City at 267 and the Walmart on Commerce Center Place in Tucson at 269? Prices here in Metro Phoenix, $275 at Sam's Club in Gilbert, the Arco Station on North 43rd Avenue at $283, and the Sinclair Station on West Indian School at 26th Avenue and West Indian School at $2.85 a gallon. Well, we've reached that time of the show. It's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, recently purchased a plug-in hybrid. My question is, if I charge it up overnight and drive 40 miles round trip each day, all on battery power, as the battery only range is about 50 miles, so I can go weeks, if not longer, without using any gasoline. Should I be adding any fuel additive to the fuel tank itself? Thanks for your answer, and like so many, I always look forward to reading your articles. Well, no, you don't need to add a gasoline additive. It's absolutely unnecessary. Now, modern gasolines are capable of sitting for at least a year. And I might argue that a little bit. But probably longer without breaking down or causing you any problems. So if you go weeks or even months without running your engine, your gasoline will be just fine. I wouldn't even know what additive to recommend these days. And honestly, as good as engines are now and as clean as the top tier gasoline is, I'd actually hesitate to put anything in my gasoline that's not absolutely necessary. So I also remember when the Chevy Volt, the first U.S. mass market plug-in hybrid, came out in late 2010, and a concerned owner at that time asked us the same exact question. We then put that to an engineer at General Motors, who told us that the Volt kept track of how often the gasoline engine was used. Now, if it actually went unused for a year, the computer would automatically run the gasoline engine to use up the fuel and force you to replace and buy new gasoline in the car. Pretty smart, huh? Well, modern plug-in hybrids do the same thing. I don't know exactly what calendar each one of them are on, but they track the use of the gasoline engine and then will periodically run it and keep things moving. That's including the actual gasoline supply itself. So unless you really miss your favorite gas station restroom, all you have to do is plug in and drive. Have fun. Yeah, I'm not sure about that not gasoline additive. We have quite a few people who have issues with carbureted cars. Now, I'm sure he's thinking fuel injection because that's what most modern cars are. But carbureted cars with gasoline tend to get gummy when they're not used in that fuel. So we recommend some additives. One of those is companies called Stabil, and they've done a good job, and I've used it that myself. So that's a little interesting thought. I'm going to ponder that. Well, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday, and you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.